Today is Monday, December the 30th, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Homelessness in US has doubled under Biden. By Patrick Martin. The number of homeless people living in shelters or on the streets topped 770,000 this year, according to the annual report by the Department of Housing and Urban Development released Friday, a rise of 18% over 2023. That is more homeless people than the population of Seattle, Detroit, Boston, or Atlanta. Homeless Americans outnumber the inhabitants of Washington, D.C., the capital city of the richest country in the world. The estimate is also a gross underestimate of the real scale of homelessness in America. It is based on a one-day point-in-time survey conducted every January in cities throughout the country. That methodology ensures a low count, since it is conducted during the coldest period of the year, when very few people can live unsheltered in northern cities, many of which bar evictions and utility shutoffs during the winter for that reason. Moreover, the survey took place in January 2024, 11 months ago, so it does not include the tens of thousands driven from their homes by natural disasters like Hurricane Helene and Hurricane Milton. Nor does it reflect the deepening social crisis in which rising interest rates, soaring rents, and shrinking real wages have made it increasingly difficult for working class families to pay their most important expense, housing. It is thus quite likely that the homeless population is well past 1 million, and that the number of people who experience homelessness for some part of the year is millions higher than that. The perfunctory press accounts that followed the HUD report did not take note of the starkest finding, one that HUD itself did not highlight, for obvious reasons. Official US homelessness has doubled since Joe Biden entered the White House. The homeless count in January 2021 was 381,000 due to the freeze on evictions imposed as a consequence of the COVID-19 pandemic. The lifting of this moratorium resulted in the homeless figure skyrocketing to 580,000 in January 2022, to 650,000 in January 2023, and then to 772,000 in January 2024. These figures explain more about why Democrat Kamala Harris lost the US presidential election than all the millions of words written and endless hours of television time devoted to the sweatings and head-scratching of media pundits and Democratic Party politicians searching for the cause of the Democratic debacle. The Democratic Party and the capitalist two-party system as a whole are completely indifferent to the rapid growth of poverty and social deprivation confronting working people in the United States. Naturally, there was no mention of the homelessness report on any of the Sunday morning television talk shows. Donald Trump, who profited politically from the social crisis, has no solution to homelessness, unless a Hitler-type solution is to be imposed. Trump's top advisor, billionaire Elon Musk, the world's richest man, fulminated this month that there was no such thing as genuine homelessness. Quote, "In most cases, the word homeless is a lie," he claimed. "It's usually a propaganda word for violent drug addicts with severe mental illness." Speaking on the podcast of fascist Tucker Carlson in October, Musk declared, "Homeless is a misnomer. It implies that someone got a little bit behind on their mortgage, and if you just gave them a job, they'd be back on their feet. What you actually have are violent drug zombies with dead eyes and needles and human feces on the street." Unquote. Trump, Musk, and Vice President-elect J.D. Vance demonstrated their attitude to the homeless on December 14th, when they feted New York subway strangler Daniel Penny at their skybox viewing the Army-Navy football game. Penny, an ex-Marine, killed a homeless man who was acting erratically, but threatening no one but himself, by applying a chokehold on his neck for a full 8 minutes. He was acquitted in early December of all charges after the judge dismissed the most serious charge, manslaughter. As for the Democrats, their rhetoric may be less vile, but their policies are no less dictated by the interests of big business. In California, the largest US state, with a GDP of $3.23 trillion, there are more than 181,000 people homeless. While Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom has spearheaded sweeps of homeless encampments that have actually reduced the homeless street count in Los Angeles, not by providing shelter, but by driving the homeless out into other locations. The causes of homelessness are easily described. People are homeless because they lack the income to purchase or rent a home. Rent is too high, wages are too low, and interest rate rises over the past 2 years have made this disparity far, far worse. Young people, and here the age might be extended to 40 or beyond, cannot afford a down payment, except with hefty assistance from parents or other family, and then struggle to pay the monthly mortgage. As for Musk's reactionary and ignorant slurs about mental illness and drug addiction, the fastest rising categories among the homeless are children, up 33%, and families up 40%. Family homelessness more than doubled in Denver, Chicago, and New York City, fueled in part by the illegal shipping of busloads of migrants from the state of Texas at the orders of Governor Greg Abbott. According to HUD, 150,000 children experienced homelessness on count night in January 2024. This figure is again a lowball estimate. There are more than 100,000 homeless children enrolled in the New York City public school system alone. One of the most savage responses to growing homelessness came this year from the right-wing majority on the U.S. Supreme Court. In a case involving the town of Grants Pass, Oregon, the court ruled by 6-3 that local governments had the right to make sleeping in cars or on the streets illegal, even though, as one dissenting justice observed, sleeping was not a crime, but a biological necessity. Since this decision, handed down in June, at least 100 cities, towns, and counties have passed local ordinances against the homeless, in some cases criminalizing them outright. In one Republican-controlled county in California, the ordinance requires anyone living on the street to walk at least 300 feet every hour on pain of arrest. The HUD report on homelessness cited a series of small bore measures adopted by the Biden administration and hailed the reduction in veteran homelessness, which has been a special target of emergency spending, as a demonstration that progress can be made. This, however, only begs the question. If homelessness among veterans can be reduced by 50% over the past two decades, why cannot the same thing be done for the rising tide of homelessness among all other sections of the population? Veteran homelessness was becoming something of a public relations black eye for successive administrations, Democratic and Republican, which have faced increasing popular reluctance to volunteer for military service. The shattered bodies and psyches of soldiers who survived imperialism's wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other countries, displayed on the streets of most American cities, were bad for recruitment. There is no such ruling class concern in relation to the vast majority of homeless people who are not veterans. They are just bad for the tourist business, bad for business generally, and need to be kept out of sight and out of mind. The Trump administration plans to build huge detention centers for migrant families arrested and held for deportation. These would certainly provide a tempting place to dispose of the homeless, either after or during the mass roundups and deportations. None of the infrequent media commentaries on homelessness takes note of the obvious and overriding fact about the homeless crisis. There is no shortage of housing in America. There are ample supplies of homes and apartments, and millions more could be built in short order. The problem is one of distribution and the economic organization of society. Millions of homes are owned as second, third, and fourth homes by the wealthy, or as speculative investments by hedge funds, and private equity firms confident that the real estate market always goes up. A government genuinely devoted to the interests of the working class would have no difficulty matching up those without homes and the homes currently unoccupied or deliberately left vacant in order to drive up prices and rents. But that would require the building of a political movement in the working class to fight for a socialist solution to their housing crisis, one that starts from the needs of the working people, not the profit interests of the billionaires and speculators. Israel storms and sets fire to the last hospital in northern Gaza. By Kevin Reed. Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, raided Kamal Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia on Friday, forcibly removed patients and staff, and then set the facility on fire. The hospital was the last medical facility in northern Gaza that remained open since the Israeli genocide against the Palestinians began in October 2023. The New York Post reported that over 240 individuals were detained, including the hospital's director, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, whom Israel accused of being an operative for Hamas. The Zionist military sought to cover up the impact of its brutal assault by claiming it had evacuated 350 patients and staff before the raid. However, the forced evacuation disrupted patient medical care, especially for those who are critically ill or dependent on life-saving treatments. Details about the hospitals or shelters where patients were transferred were not readily available, as the situation remained chaotic with the ongoing military action. The World Health Organization, the WHO, condemned the raid, stating that rendering the last major hospital in northern Gaza non-operational meant that the lives of around 75,000 residents who relied on its services were endangered. The WHO further criticised the systematic destruction of Gaza's healthcare infrastructure, highlighting that the remaining hospitals are ill-equipped to handle the influx of patients from Kamal Adwan. Medical and humanitarian groups expressed deep concern over the raid, emphasising Dr. Safia's dedication to children's health under dire conditions. Hamas denied Israel's claims that militants were using the hospital as a command center and called for international intervention to protect medical facilities. The incident has intensified debates over the protection of healthcare institutions in the conflict zones and the humanitarian impact of military operations on civilian infrastructure. A report published on Saturday by the WHO said, quote, "Initial reports indicate that some areas of the hospital were burnt and severely damaged during the raid, including the laboratory, surgical unit, engineering and maintenance department, operations theatre, and the medical store. Earlier in the day, 12 patients and a female health staff were reportedly forced to evacuate to destroyed and non-functional Indonesian hospital, where it is not possible to provide any care, while most of the staff, stable patients and companions were moved to a nearby location. Additionally, some people were reportedly stripped and forced to walk towards southern Gaza. Over the last 2 months, the area around the hospital has remained highly volatile, and attacks on the hospitals and on health workers have occurred almost daily. This week, bombardments in its vicinity reportedly killed 50 people, including 5 health workers from Kamal Adwan Hospital. Kamal Adwan is now empty. The movement and treatment of these critical patients under such conditions pose grave risks to their survival. WHO is deeply concerned for their well-being, as well as for the Kamal Adwan Hospital director, who has been reportedly detained during the raid. The WHO lost contact with him since the raid began." Unquote. The Kamal Adwan Hospital has been the target of repeated military attacks and sieges by Israeli forces over the past 14 months. On October 25th, Israeli forces besieged the hospital and trapped approximately 600 patients, companions and staff inside. The WHO reported at the time that medical staff suffered injuries and were detained during this raid. Director Dr. Safia stated that the Israeli tanks surrounded the facility, cut off electricity and shelled the building, targeting the second and third floors. Following the raid, the hospital suffered significant damage, including the destruction of critical supplies due to bombings. In early December 2024, the IDF conducted airstrikes near the hospital, resulting in civilian casualties. On December 11th, the hospital's maternity ward was targeted, leading to the deaths of two mothers and their newborn babies. The following day, Israeli forces raided the hospital, detaining approximately 70 medical staff members and ordering all males above the age of 16 to leave for searches. Reports have also emerged that Israeli bulldozers crushed people sheltering outside the hospital, causing numerous fatalities. The Palestinian Health Minister called for an investigation into these incidents, and international organizations expressed deep concern over the humanitarian implications of the attacks on the hospital. The intensifying attacks and shutdown of Kamal Adwan Hospital are part of the systematic destruction of the medical infrastructure in Gaza by Israel. Since October 7th, 2023, numerous hospitals have been targeted, and the sustained assault on healthcare facilities is a central component of the deliberate murder and ethnic cleansing operation of the regime of Benjamin Netanyahu. Israel has carried out airstrikes against the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in central Gaza, the Al-Wafa Hospital in central Gaza City, the Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza City, the Turkish-Palestinian Friendship Hospital in central Gaza, and the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunus. Dozens were killed in the strikes, and countless others died from the lack of access to medical care amid Israel's rampage that has destroyed or damaged two-thirds of all structures in the Palestinian enclave. Although comprehensive data is limited, a significant number of civilians, including children, have been killed as a direct result of attacks on medical infrastructure, including drone missile strikes on ambulances attempting to reach injured people or transporting victims to hospitals. The airstrikes on October 22, 2023, near the Al-Shifa and Al-Quds hospitals, for example, contributed to what has been described as the bloodiest night of the genocide at the time. Meanwhile, military operations in Gaza have caused significant casualties among medical personnel. The Gaza Health Ministry has reported that approximately 986 healthcare workers have been killed since October 2023. This includes 165 doctors, 260 nurses, 300 management and support personnel, 184 health associate professionals, 76 pharmacists, and 12 other health workers. On November 3, 2023, the Gaza Health Ministry reported that 136 paramedics had been killed and 25 ambulance vehicles had been destroyed since the beginning of the conflict. On the same day, Israel bombed a medical convoy outside of Al-Shifa Hospital. Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, who has been detained in the latest assault on the Kamal Adwan Hospital, was born in 1973 in the Jabalia refugee camp in the northern Gaza Strip, and is a Palestinian pediatrician and human rights defender. Dr. Safia has refused to evacuate the hospital, choosing to remain with the patients despite orders from Israeli military forces. In October 2024, during an earlier Israeli raid, Dr. Safia was briefly detained but returned to continue his work. Tragically, during his detention, his 15-year-old son Ibrahim, who was sheltering at the hospital with the family, was killed by an Israeli drone strike. On December 27, 2024, Israeli forces detained Dr. Abu Safia again during a raid on the hospital, accusing him of being a Hamas operative. This action has drawn condemnation from medical and humanitarian organizations, highlighting his commitment to children's health under dire circumstances. Throughout the Gaza genocide, the World Socialist website has reported on and analyzed the Israeli government's attacks on medical facilities and healthcare personnel, which has unfolded with the backing of the US government. These deliberately murderous attacks now barely elicit comment from the Biden administration, as it focuses on exiting the White House for the incoming second Trump administration. On Friday, White House National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby made disingenuous comments to reporters, saying, Quote, hospitals should not be active scenes of combat and conflict. People should be able to feel safe going to a hospital, get the medical care that they desperately need. Kirby also reiterated Israeli claims that Hamas is using hospitals to store caches of weapons, to house fighters, and to plan and coordinate. Unquote. Allegations that have never been backed up with a single piece of evidence. Kirby then declined to answer specific questions about the strike on the Kamal Adwan Hospital. South Korea's acting president impeached amid ongoing protests. By Ben McGrath. The acute political crisis in South Korea continues to deepen as the National Assembly, led by the main opposition Democratic Party, DP, voted to impeach acting President Han Duck-soo on Friday. Han, who is also Prime Minister, assumed presidential duties on December 14th, when President Yoon Suk-yeol was also impeached and suspended from office over his failed attempt to impose martial law on December 3rd. The DP submitted the motion against Han to the 300-seat parliament on Thursday. It passed the following day, 192-0, with the DP's 170 seats and the rest from minor parties, or nominal independents, aligned with the Democrats. All 108 members of the ruling People Power Party, the PPP, boycotted the vote. Although a parliamentary minority, it holds ruling party status as President Yoon comes from the PPP. The PPP is seeking an injunction to reverse Parliament's decision last Friday. While the South Korean constitution requires a two-thirds parliamentary majority to impeach a president, a cabinet minister can be impeached by a simple majority. The party argues that since Han is serving as the acting president, the two-thirds majority rule should apply to him. Han publicly accepted his impeachment, stating, quote, I respect the decision of the National Assembly, and in order not to add to the confusion and uncertainty, I will suspend my duties in line with relevant laws and wait for the swift and wise decision of the Constitutional Court. Unquote. The court rules on whether impeached officials are removed from power or not. He has been replaced as acting president by Finance Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Choi Sung-mok. Han, appointed by Yoon to his cabinet, and the Triple P have stonewalled impeachment proceedings against Yoon. In impeaching Han, the DP cited his refusal to appoint three new Constitutional Court justices to fill existing vacancies, as well as blocking bills to establish a special counsel probes into Yoon's attempt to impose martial law and into his wife, Kim Yeon-hyo, who is accused of corruption. The DP also accused Han, in his capacity as Prime Minister, of failing to oppose Yoon's attempt to impose martial law, essentially a coup plot, which Han admitted to learning about nearly 2 hours before the President made his declaration. In order to remove a President from office, 6 of 9 judges on the Constitutional Court must approve. They have 180 days from Yoon's suspension to make a decision. Currently, there are only 6 judges on the court, with 3 vacant seats since October. This means if only one justice sides with Yoon, he would return to office with all presidential powers, including over the military. The Constitutional Court is one of the country's 2 top-level judicial bodies, alongside the Supreme Court. The president appoints all 9 justices. However, only 3 are directly chosen by the chief executive. 3 justices are nominated by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and the other 3 are nominated by the National Assembly. At present, 2 justices were directly appointed by Yoon's predecessor, Moon Jae-in, a Democrat. 1 was directly appointed by Yoon, the other 3 were chosen by the Supreme Court. The National Assembly is now wrangling over the appointment of its 3 allotted judges, with the PPP claiming that an acting president cannot legally appoint the justices. Han had sided with the PPP. Mass protests are continuing against Yoon and the PPP, which demonstrators see as an accomplice in the president's attempt to impose a military dictatorship. On Saturday, upwards of 500,000 protesters gathered in Gwanghwamun, Seoul, calling for Yoon's removal from office and arrest. They also call for the dissolution of the PPP. Police claimed only 35,000 took part, a drastic undercounting meant to downplay the protests in hopes of preventing them from growing. Notably, many anti-government protesters on Saturday also waved Palestinian flags in opposition to Israel's more than year-long genocide in Gaza, an expansion of war throughout the Middle East, which has been backed by Seoul. It is a recognition that the attack on democratic rights is not limited to a single government, but is being carried out by the ruling class around the world. It is also a sign of the anti-war sentiment that exists within the South Korean population. A counter-protest of Yoon's supporters took place approximately a kilometre away, which police also estimated at 35,000 participants. Organisers ludicrously claimed 3 million people took part, a fact easily disproven by photos of the rally. Yoon is also widely despised, with over 75% of the population supporting his removal from office. While large by any measure, Saturday's anti-Yoon rally was significantly smaller than the 2 million who demonstrated at the National Assembly on December 14th to demand Yoon's impeachment. The Democrats are downplaying the continuing danger to democratic rights, seeking to direct public anger behind the actions of the National Assembly, as well as the impeachment of figures like Han Duck-soo. The DP and their supporters in smaller fake progressive parties and the trade unions conduct the rallies, like the one on Saturday, as campaign events and present Yoon's removal from office as practically a done deal. All the problems workers, farmers and youth face are laid at the feet of Yoon, giving the impression that if only he were gone, social and economic problems would be resolved. As well, the DP's allies in the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, the KCTU, have ended their token indefinite general strike, which was nothing more than scattered protests and short, partial walkouts designed to let workers blow off steam without affecting big business or the government. Yoon's coup attempt was not ultimately the result of one man's predilection for authoritarianism. It was a product of the crisis of capitalism, which is unfolding around the world. The ruling classes are increasingly turning to the far right and fascistic figures, notably Donald Trump in the United States, to impose their will on the working class. The DP and its allies are seeking to limit the protest to the safe channels of the National Assembly and court system in order to protect the capitalist system itself, thereby covering up the potential for another declaration of martial law, should Yoon resume office. This is in a country that was dominated by dictatorial and military rule from its founding as a state in 1948 through to the 1980s. Behind the facade of democratic reforms erected after mass protests in 1987, the military and state apparatus retained tremendous influence. The Democrats' perfidy has only emboldened Yoon. He and his legal team have largely rejected cooperation with the impeachment and investigation into his martial law declaration. For nearly 2 weeks, Yoon refused to accept documents from the Constitutional Court related to hearings in his impeachment trial. On Friday, Yoon's legal team did finally accept court documents at the last minute before the first impeachment hearing. Yoon Gap-gyun, one of Yoon's lawyers, claimed that the documents were delivered illegally and they were unable to prepare properly. The next hearing is scheduled for January 3rd. Yoon has also ignored summons from the Corruption Investigation Office for high-ranking officials, the CIO, to appear for questioning, including a third summons requesting he appear this past Sunday on charges of insurrection and abuse of power. It is possible the CIO will request an arrest warrant for Yoon, but this will by no means resolve the ongoing political crisis. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.